In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, total, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
This is an Odyssey original.
This is the War in Ukraine Daily. I'm Charles Feldman.
And I'm Mike Simpson from the KNX Odyssey Studios in Los Angeles. Pictures and stories coming out of Bucha, Ukraine, seem to get more gruesome by the hour. Evidence mounts of Russian war crimes committed there while the troops occupy the suburb of Kyiv. Yesterday on the podcast, we heard from a man from Kyiv, Kirill, who talked about his friend who went to Bucha Monday and saw the horrors of the war up close. Today, we will hear from that friend. U.S. has imposed new sanctions against Russia. The two adult daughters of Vladimir Putin are the targets. We'll look into what kind of impacts that could have on Putin himself and the war.
We start with evidence of Russian war crimes. Anton photographed the destruction in Bucha and another nearby village and joins us now. Anton, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. What made you go to Bucha and what did you see there?
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. Actually, I went not only to Bucha, I went to Hostomel, it's near the Bucha, and I saw the Mriya airplane, the famous one that was destroyed by Russian forces. And then the closer you get to the front line, the more destructions you see, destroyed high-rise buildings or private houses and other stuff. The enemy's tanks, the APCs. Well, I didn't see the people. They removed all the bodies. I was the very next day after the first time that our troops came in the Bucha and Hostomel. I visited the next day and they already removed the bodies. So I saw only blood and I saw the destroyed streets, exploded buildings, and so on and so forth.
And what was it like to see all this? And were you coming from Kyiv? Because that really is not that far from that area. So this was like, you know, in your own backyard, pretty much.
Pretty much, yes. I live in the left side of the Kyiv, but my parents live closer to the Bucha. They heard what was going on there. I was speaking about this situation is going on with them and in Bucha too.
Anton, are you a professional photographer?
I'm a history teacher.
You're a history teacher?
I received a degree in history, but in some point of my life, I rethink my values and I became a photographer.
Okay. And you decided to go there for what reason? Just curiosity, professionally? I mean, what made you go from your hometown, which isn't far, as Mike pointed out, mm-hmm. It isn't far, but why did you want to do that? To photograph the historical record? Was that it?
When I saw the first pictures from there, I get very emotional. The tears start, I start crying and I want to see it with my own eyes. And I want to pick, and I wanted to picture anything that I could. And I asked my friends. I have some connections in the volunteers, among the volunteers, and they take me with them to the Bucha and Hostomel and Mria.
What kind of an effect did it have on you when you were walking around there and you were photographing and seeing these things?
I got very emotional. I mostly calm person. I'm an introvert person, but I could not hide my emotions. And it affects my photography very much. I work mostly in black and white, but in this situation, I wanted to show that not only in black and white, but in color too, and trying to get as much as I could then.
Did you, when you were in Bucha, have an opportunity to interact, talk to any of the people there, survivors who live there? And if you did, what kind of conversations did you have?
Actually, I have an opportunity to talk to some people. We went to interview some of them. They said that they won't give us the interview. They will give us the interview after we eat some borscht or soup.
After you eat borscht soup? Okay.
Yes. Yes. They were very friendly. They were smiling. They were happy to see us. Before the war, in Bucha lived about 64,000 people. Now it's about 3,700, if I am not mistaken.
But after you had the borscht soup, what did they tell you?
They told that they have some confrontations with the Russian military. And one man, I don't know how to believe this story or not, one man said that his wife traded a sack of potatoes for a Kalashnikov assault rifle of the soldier Russian, because he was very hungry, because they were looting everything. The nearest markets were looted. The nearest banks were looted. I saw the broken windows. The neighbors that left in Bucha, they said that Russian militaries entered the houses and looted them too. So I guess they were lucky.
Given what we've seen in the other pictures, you know, before you got there, and how horrific some of this was with the bodies on the streets and these, you know, executions, are you worried, and is there a big sense and a big worry that, you know, as the Russians withdraw from some of these other cities, that they have gone through the same kind of thing that happened in Bucha?
I think we're not seeing the worst yet. We still have Mariupol, we still have Kherson. I think that in those cities, things can get worse than this.
Anton, you mentioned that you got there the other day, so the bodies had been removed, but you saw a lot of blood. I understand, though, that you also saw and maybe photographed a lot of dead dogs. Is that right?
Yes, you're right. I saw many dead dogs. I saw dogs that was... if I'm not mistaken, pedigree dogs just walking around without their without purpose, I guess. But yes, they were killing dogs too.
So the Russians were killing the dogs.
Yes.
So the dogs were shot. Is that it? Or
shot? Yes. Just lying on the road. I don't know what to add to this.
Cruel.
And if I can ask, Anton, how old are you?
I'm 31.
31. How is this going to change your life, do you think? Because you're a young guy and you're seeing a lot of things that I'm sure, even though you were a history teacher for a while, you studied history, I'm sure you never anticipated experiencing.
Yes. What's interesting for a historian is horrible for the person who's living through it. I don't know. I have this point in my life that I think the life is separated now. Before I saw Bucha, or before I didn't saw Bucha, and after I saw it, so nothing gonna change anything from now on that I saw. Thanks. Those.
Anton, thank you so much for talking to us. Our best to you. Went there and photographed Bucha the day after the Russians withdrew from that town. Again, this is not too far from Kyiv. Vladimir Putin's two daughters, the targets of the latest U.S. sanctions against Russia over the war, a top Biden administration official says the U.S. thinks the daughters could control some of their father's extensive assets.
There are also tougher penalties now in place against Russian banks, but will Putin respond more to his daughters being targeted? Chris Miller is director of the Foreign Policy Research Institute's Eurasia program and author of Putinomics, Money and Power in Resurgent Russia. The move against Putin's two adult daughters, will that have a significant impact on Putin's finances, or is it mostly symbolic, kind of like targeting the family of a mafia boss?
Yeah, I think that move is more symbolic. Everyone knows that Putin's daughters aren't decision makers in Russia. And in fact, they've largely tried to stay out of public life, although it's changed a little bit over the past couple of years. But the most important measure that was announced today is that Russia's biggest bank is being subjected to the most strict sanctions that the U.S. has. And that's a big move that will impose some additional economic costs on Russia over its invasion of Ukraine.
Okay, so we'll get more on that in a second. But the first one with daughters, does it put the squeeze on him at all if they do have some of his assets? Because, you know, you give it to other people, so it doesn't look like you have all of your stuff, you know, right there in your bank account.
If it's true, it would put the squeeze on them. I think the question of whether Putin is making decisions based on his own personal bank accounts or those of his family, or whether he's making decisions about Russian foreign policy, I think is a different question. And it seems to me that it's hard to explain what Russia's up to by thinking that Putin's trying to maximize his personal wealth. If he's trying to do that, starting war with Ukraine was a really very bad idea. And so I think we should take Putin on his word when he says that he wants to make Ukraine subordinate to Russia. And he thinks that Russia's great power status on the world stage requires Russia to control Ukraine.
Okay, but that said, even Vladimir Putin, right, needs the support of some people in Russia. And I'm not talking about the populace. I'm talking about these oligarchs and his old buddies from when he was in the KGB, who have made a lot of money in recent decades, right? Is part of the idea of these sanctions against those individuals to squeeze them so tightly that they'll what? Turn on him? And is that plausible?
Well, I think you need to differentiate between the KGB elite and Russia's business elite who are not from the KGB. And when we talk about oligarchs, we mostly refer to the latter category, people who run big businesses and often have big yachts that are parked in Mediterranean ports. But in most cases, these aren't people who actually wield real power in Russia. The real power, as you say, is the former KGB chiefs who still run big parts of the Russian security services. It's not plausible that targeting the oligarchs who are simply involved in business is going to change Russian foreign policy. None of them are going to call up Putin, ask him to cut a ceasefire deal with Ukraine. The risk to them, their businesses, their personal safety would be huge. It's a different question about whether we can pressure other members of the security services elite. But I think the reality is that although some of them, I'm sure, have assets outside of the country, in reality, they're not making decisions based on foreign assets. They're making the decisions that they pursue based on their sense of what's best for Russia and also their sense of what's best for themselves in terms of domestic politics. Because if Putin ever does leave the scene, it's someone else in the Russian security services who will be most likely to replace him.
So we've done all these things, but there's still major carve-outs, and obviously energy is the big one, right?
That's right. If you look at the Russian economy, the two biggest industries are the export of oil and the export of natural gas. And thus far, neither the US or Europe has really tried to target the energy sector. The theory of the case has been that if we target other sectors, the cost to us will be limited and the cost to Russia will be meaningful. And that's been true, but there's only so much you can do to Russia setting aside oil and gas. And so I think we've basically reached the limit with the measures today of pain you can impose on the Russian government and the Russian economy without beginning to start to restrict Russia's ability to export oil and gas.
Chris Miller, director of the Foreign Policy Research Institute's Eurasia Program, author of Putinomics, Money and Power in Resurgent Russia. This is an Odyssey original. Find us and others on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
That 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.